everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is episode 385, and it's a Valiant Sunday episode. And we're getting a chance to return to the chronology. And for those that aren't familiar, it's basically for the new Valiant, the Valiant that rebooted in 2012. It's a reading order. So if you haven't had a chance to check them out, these are great episodes to kind of follow along, you know, go read the issue and then come hear what our thoughts are. And we're hoping to do these a little more often because obviously, you know, we're like 6 years in now. It's crazy to think that, it was summer of 2012. So 6 years in now. So there's a lot to catch up on with the reading order. So always going to put the priority for Valiant on the newer stuff. But whenever we get a chance, we're going to do these chronologies. So Jesse's joining me again to talk about the issue today. Welcome to the show, Jesse.
Yep, brother. Time to talk about some XO.
Right. So before we dive into the issue and I get into the creative team, you know, you were there when it restarted in 2012. I was there as well, but not until I heard rumblings and then it kind of fell off my radar. And it wasn't actually until I want to say later in the year that I finally dug in and read. By the time I think I read XO, I think it was on issue 5. Is that the one that Ninjak was in?
Yeah, I want to say issue number 5 is the one where Ninjak is called Enter Ninjak, and that's where you know, MI6 dispatches him to take care of Auric.
Yeah, so that was when I realized, oh, the new XO's out. I need to jump on, and I binge them. I bought them digitally and I binged them. So I wasn't there right when they were first released. So were you there? I mean, I know you're a much bigger Valiant fan than I am. Like, were you there when it?
So I was there. And now not there as in, like, you know, standing next to Dinesh and the crew, you know, as they, you know, had this happy release. I was actually serving as a U.S. diplomat overseas in Asia, at the American Embassy in Bangkok. And I had to read everything digitally at the time because it's not like I could just walk down the street in Sukhumvit Avenue and pick up a comic book real easily from America. But yes, I anxiously awaited the release, and I dove right on in.
All right. So what was your reaction? I mean, it's a little bit of a different origin slightly. So were you on board already? Like, oh yeah, this is great. Or did it take you a little while to warm up?
So here's how I felt about it. All right. One of my favorite issues back in the early 90s, high school for me, was XO Manowar Zero. It was the origin story, as Zero issues are supposed to be. And it really broke down, how Auric had dealt with the spider aliens and how he had got the XO Manowar skin and how he had fought his way off the spaceship and whatnot after capture. It was an amazing issue. My brother loved it. I loved it. I mean, it was, and the artwork was great. Phenomenally done. I believe it was Joe Quesada was involved in that, yeah, if I'm not cool. mistaken.
A cool chrome cover too.
Yeah. Chrome wraparound cover. You can't get more 90s than this.
Right.
I mean, unless you had some pouches. And so here we are, fast forward, you know, 20 so years, and the release comes out for the new run of XO. And I liked how they spent 2 or 3 issues telling the origin story, because in the original Valiant, I got the Zero issue, which was phenomenal. This was, for me, like 3 consecutive Zero issues, you know, from the start of the Visigoth in his father's camp to what we're going to discuss here in a second, out in space with the Vine. And how he comes to find his Shanhara, the XO Manowar suit, and then his return to Earth, of course, which occurs in issue 3. I loved it. I did. I knew it wasn't going to be the same. I knew it wasn't going to match beat for beat, line for line, off of the original 90s story, and it shouldn't. Just the same way Ultimate Spider-Man was similar to Amazing Fantasy 15 and Spider-Man 1, but it was not the same. It was, it was an updated version. It's supposed to be an updated version because it's an updated world.
Yeah, 100% agree. Now, for me, XO wasn't my favorite character, or even my second favorite character from Valiant back in the day. So there was a part of me that was a little disappointed they decided to start with XO. But that, you know, that wasn't why I didn't read it. I had just, it had just fallen off my radar. And then when I stumbled across it, like I said, I think issue 5 had just come out, and, you know, I started reading it, and, you know, from the first issue I was hooked, and like I said, binged the first 5. So, they've really made him kind of the Superman of, you know, their universe, which he kind of was back in the day, but I think he's even more integral to the universe now. And it kind of seems like to me, much like DC and Superman, I've always felt like creatively and sales-wide, as goes Superman, so goes the DC universe. And it kind of seems that way with XO as well. All right, well, let me...
Yeah, you know...
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I loved, and I've told this to, I've told this to a few folks, I loved the first 20 or so issues of Exo Manowar. I loved Unity, how it started. I loved how Armor Hunters, how it went in there. And then what happened was there was this, you know, and we'll get there eventually, but there was this weird kind of dead space that lasted like 15 issues or something following Armor Hunters. Like they didn't know what to do with the series. And so, you know, eventually, of course, it ended at 50, which is a pretty good run. They went on hiatus and then came back with the modern release, which I thought was a lot, you know, which was phenomenal in its own right. But yeah, there was, it had a lot of magic to it. But like you said, it was a Superman kind of, you know, truth, justice in the American way that was going on for many, many issues where the character kind of was just, I don't know. I mean, he's predictable and flat. And I just didn't touch, work with me very well. But anyhow, moving on.
Yeah, we'll get there eventually. It'll be interesting because I haven't read those particular issues since, you know, I first bought them. And I've wanted to do a reread for a while. So part of the reason we're doing this. So let's dive into issue 2. Let me give the creative team real fast. It's written by Robert Venditti. The pencils are by Kerry Nord. We've got inks by Stefano Guadano, and colors by Moose Bauman. So the other cool thing about it, before I dive into kind of the synopsis, is there's a very in-depth the story so far, even though there's only one prior issue. I think the powers that be at Valiant, you know, they knew, well, you know, we're relaunching, we need to make sure that it's, you know, very much reader friendly for people jumping on, because there may be, you know, fans that didn't get a chance to pick up issue 1, or, you know, if somebody stumbles across this, we really want them to understand what's going on. So inside the front cover, you've got a pretty detailed synopsis of the first issue. We meet Arik of Dacia, heir to the Visigoth throne. We hear about his fight with the Romans where they were defeated. And while they were fighting, Arik's wife and some of the children, other women of the camp, were kidnapped by the Romans. Arik goes out to try to rescue them, comes across these vine aliens who are there basically leaving little seedlings, if you will. You know, it's like swapping human babies for these seedlings to eventually infiltrate, you know, generations as they breed with humans. Arik and his men are obviously outmatched by this you know, advanced technology of the Vine aliens, and they're brought aboard the Vine ship and taken to the Vine colony ship. And once they arrive, they do manage, Arik and his buddy Gafdi do manage to escape briefly, and they witness a ritual, one of the Vine aliens trying to put on this armor that basically spawns out of this floating sphere, if you will. And the Vine alien's unsuccessful with bonding with the armor and is killed. And then Arik and Gafdi are recaptured, and they're locked up in the slave pen. And so that's where this issue starts. And in the first page, we actually see Arik dreaming of his wife, Deidre, back on Earth, of, you know, nicer times, let's say, intimate times with Deidre. And it's clear how much he cares for her. But unfortunately, he wakes up. He is in the cell of the Vine. It's been 2 days. They haven't had food or water, as Gafdi remarks on, and Arik says, yeah, they want us weak and docile. You know, it's a pretty common tactic to do to prisoners in order, you know, to get them to do what you want. So one of the Vine guards comes and escorts him out of their cell. He's not really gentle about it. He even smacks Arik in the back, tells him keep moving, which we can read because it's vine speak, but obviously they don't understand. They're taken to a garden, and the guards are talking amongst themselves about what a soft species the humans appear to be. They've already sent 8 bodies to the compost room. And the other guard remarks that the gardens will no doubt break more. So the slaves are set to toiling in the garden. Even though they don't understand the vine, they're told, help the plants grow at the stem or you'll nourish them at the root, which is obviously a reference to being thrown into the compost room. So we see over the first few pages that Arik, Gofdi, and the rest of the prisoners are made to work. And they're, you know, these are Visigoths, right, from the Middle Ages. So they haven't seen a lot of technology. So when the sprinkler system turns on to water the plants, Gafty's like, wow, rain without sky, what power do these creatures wield? So they really do understand that they're outmatched. And then Gafty's like, well, at least if we're farmers, we'll have something to eat. You know, we'll be able to eat well. And as soon as he takes a bite out of one of the fruits, he's zapped by a staff of one of the vine alien guards. And looks like maybe he's about to have his head chopped off when Arik steps in and saves him. But he takes a beating for his troubles. So one of the aliens very gently reburies the fruit, saying, sleep now and grow again, cherished one. So clearly they have, I mean, they're called the vine, right? So clearly they have an affinity for plants, much more respect for plants than for other like living sentient beings, it seems. So Arik's punishment for having saved Gafty, for having stepped in, he gets one of his hands sliced off. So that's kind of a hearkening back to the original Exo Man of War, where he lost a hand as well. So Arik manages to survive losing his hand. You know, he's a tough guy, he's Visigoth, wraps it up with a part of his shirt and sleeps. And as we turn the page, we see it's years later. They both, him and Gafty, have beards now. They are still toiling in the gardens. And Gafty seems like he's lost hope. He's like, you know, I don't want to fight anymore. You know, just do what they say, Arik. My sores have barely healed from the last time we were stuck in the compost room. But Arik, all these years he's been planning an escape. He says, today will mark, I'm finished arguing, today will mark the end of our suffering. And they have a plan for escape, and all the other prisoners are in on it. They've got a map, a crude map, that shows where the alien armory is supposed to be. And they do manage to escape from the cage. They basically jump the guard when he comes to take them for their work shift. And using the crude weapons they've managed to fashion with whatever is on hand, they escape. They release the other prisoners. Arik wields one of the staffs, manages to kill one of the aliens. They arm themselves with what they can find from the few guards that they've overcome, and they take the fight to the vine. Now, they're vastly outnumbered as well as outgunned. So I think that really any success they have, you can kind of attribute to desperation, basically. You know, they're not exactly well fed and in good health either. But again, you know, the fight of a desperate man. So they do manage to find the armory. There are some vine guards standing there in front, ask them to lower their weapons. Clearly they do not. Arik says, the armor is just beyond. We must go through them. Again, they take the fight right to them. They manage to be victorious, and they enter what they think is the armory, but is actually a temple. And there we see the sphere that we saw in the first issue floating there. And Gafty remarks, if this is an armory, it's decidedly lacking in armor. Is there just the one? Arik says, one will have to be enough. And as he steps up, the sphere starts to unfold itself. Meanwhile, reinforcements have showed up outside, and they're trying to get in because the door has been barricaded. So one of the vine aliens sticks a little explosive device on it and says the armor is worthless. It's a story told by a priest to keep hold of their followers. Shanhara is a death sentence to any fool who tries to wear it. So That's what the floating orb is. It is, in fact, Shannara. It is, in fact, the Exo Man of War. And as we see in the next panel, it is starting to bond with Arik. But, of course, the question will remain, will he be able to actually wear the armor, as it has killed any Vine who has tried to wear it over the years? Meanwhile, the Vine Priest sees Arik starting to don the armor and calls out, "Sacrilege!" Gafty tells him to be quiet, and Arik screams in pain and seems to pass out. The Vine, even though, again, the humans don't understand him, says he has paid for his transgressions. Shannara would never choose a human. And right at that moment, the doors explode in. The Vine are there saying the rebellion is over. The compost room is even too good for them. Kill them. Kill them all. And as they're about to start firing, we see paf, paf, paf. And the priest says, "No, it's not possible." And there's Arik. Once again conscious, once again the warrior that he was always meant to be. It's a really, really cool full-plate page splash of Arik in the armor, and the priest in the background saying, "Shannara has chose a human, and it's to be continued." So really great issue, and it pays off in that image of Arik in the armor. It's kind of like what we've been waiting almost two full issues to see, right? Arik of Dacia in the Exo Manowar armor. So yeah, I thought it was great. And again, probably didn't have quite the same experience you did reading it, Jesse, because I'm sure when you read issue two is when it had just come out and you had to wait a month for the next issue. I saw this page, was super excited, and immediately opened up issue three. So what were your thoughts on upon reading issue two?
Well, I was happy the way they did it. I think Vendetti and Dinesh and Simmons and Simons and all of them, I think they did a really good idea. They spaced it out. They made you anticipate it. Because let's be honest, all you have to do is go on Google and you know who Exo Man of War is. So, but it didn't come. They didn't just give it to you on day one. You had to wait a month, you know, and then you had to wait the whole issue, and you weren't sure, you know, how this was going to play out. Even though you knew the story to a degree, you didn't know every detail of it. You didn't know the outcome. And so I think they did a really good job with that. I was very excited, like I said, for the first, 25 issues. I think it's a phenomenal series.
Yeah. How do you feel about the Vine versus the spider aliens? I find it kind of interesting. I mean, being that they're like basically sentient plants almost, they worship plant life. They're quite different from the spider aliens, but at the same time, as far as like the way they kind of like their military structure and the way they come across as antagonists is very similar. You know, that they're not really fleshed out. We don't really understand a lot of their motivation. They're almost a plot device in a way.
Well, here's the thing. They wanted to make it a similar universe, but not the same universe. And the spider aliens, that was an old plot device. And it's not to say it won't be seen again. I mean, it very well may be. The universe is quite vast and expansive. But you see the little seed, little plantlings that they put in there. We see them again later on in Imperium. We see them again in other aspects of the Valiant universe. So it was definitely a modern plot device that we see not just in this title, but in multiple titles, and we still will see it in multiple titles to come. Heck, we could see it in Britannia, or we could see it, in an old, flashback issues of Eternal Warrior, perhaps, where the Vine is involved in nefarious activity, or they were the wizard, or maybe Merlin was a Vine. You know, it's impossible to say. I think it was pretty smart to do it the way they did it. The concept of having a sentient kind of a self-aware plant that evolves into almost a life form that is, almost humanoid. Why not? Why not? You know, I mean, not everything has to be a primate or a lizard. So I'm down with it. I think it's an interesting take. And as you'll find out when, looking deeper into some of the further issues, there's other alien races out there for us.
Yeah. I also like, it's kind of a departure, like having some of his fellow Visigoths there with him, as opposed to just, you know, him on his own. I like that aspect of it as well, because it shows that, you know, even though they've been there for years, he's still a leader. He's still, you know, motivating his men to escape. It may have taken years to, you know, to gather the tools and the things that they needed and to have a plan, but you can clearly see the contrast between him and Gafty, right? They're both Visigoths, but in a way, Gafty's kind of given up. He's you know, he just wants to do what they say and try to, you know, have what peace he can, as opposed to Arik, who's never going to back down, never going to give up.
Absolutely, and that's at the core of his character. And he has to be written that way because you got to think about it. I mean, he's gonna deal with a lot worse than he's dealt with at this point. So you know, he's gonna get to the point where he's got the world on his shoulders or worlds on his shoulders. So it's kind of hard to have a character that's gonna be that big and that prominent in front and center who's gonna give up so easily. And it's in his blood. You know, he's aggressive and direct to a fault. And although he's definitely his personality is adjusted and he refines and matures over the issues, at his core, he's a warrior. You know, he's not above stepping out of his armor and fighting fist to fist.
Yeah, he's very much a swing my sword first, ask questions later kind of guy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I know that eventually he becomes more of a tactical and strategic general, thinking about things from experience. But I would say that Arik is an experience-based person. He's not an innovator. He's not a scientist. He doesn't think about, like some people, they can, like, you know, look at an electric fence and say, hey, man, I probably shouldn't touch that thing. Other people have to, you know, just they have to touch it. You know, they just have to touch it before they realize it shocks you. Arik, he has to make mistakes before he learns. That's how he learns. He's a hands-on, mistake-driven learner.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the art. Cary Nord has never been my favorite artist. He's got a great sense of pace and a great sense of, you know, storytelling from panel to panel. But I've just never been a really big fan of his rendering. That being said, his style does very much suit Exo Manowar. Because it is a little bit more of a loose style. So you get, you know, a lot of the kinetic movement, especially in battle. And because it is a little bit of a rougher style, again, it kind of suits the style of warrior that Arik is. So I again, when I read it, you know, I didn't have a problem with the art. But again, it's not like, oh man, you know, Cary Nord's right up there for me. But I certainly didn't have a problem with the art. And I also thought the colors were done extremely well by Moose Bauman. What are your thoughts on the art, Jesse?
So I don't dislike Cary Nord. I think that the reason why they chose him was because of his background on Conan. Because at the time, the way that Exo was being marketed and described was a mixture between, imagine if Conan the Barbarian was inside of, you know, a living Iron Man suit. And so to tell a Conan-like story, you would want a Conan-like artist. You know, I don't think Tomas Giorello was around at the time, who's also a Conan artist. But, you know, I think that was probably the driving factor behind getting Cary Nord in there. I own a couple of Nord's pieces of art, and I like them. I do. They have a Nord style. It's very specific how he draws faces. It's specific how he draws emotion. It's a Nord style. It's not photorealistic. It's not, you know, house comic book, style. Do I hate it? No, I don't. I like it. You know, it's not my favorite artist on the planet. There's, you know, artists out there that I'm drawn to. But I can see why they use it, for this series.
Yeah, I think for me, my favorite panels for him are when he's not drawing humans. When he draws the vine, I think those look great. In the first issue, when there's that giant double page spread of the battlefield and he's drawing, like, you know, Ballista and Onagers and stuff, that looks really cool. But yeah, for me, there's not enough refinement in his figures for me. And so that's just, you know, and again, it's just, it's total personal preference. But where he does, where he does shine is when he's not drawing human figures, or when he's drawing human figures that are in the midst of combat, because then, it does give that sense of movement because it's a little bit of a looser style.
My favorite, work that I've seen Kerry Nord do, was actually in issue one of Eternal Warrior Days of Steel. There's a double page spread in there where it's like, shows this ancient battlefield and, you know, and just the horses and cavalry in action and swords and bodies everywhere. It just looks phenomenal. It's sad how questionable the series was, but the artwork, he did a really good job with that. Everything was sharp. It was crisp. He definitely looked like he had a couple beers and put some good time and effort into it.
Yeah, I haven't read that, but that doesn't surprise me because, again, that's kind of similar to that scene in XO1. You know, I think just have him draw, you know, giant battlefield. You know, like, he'd be great to do like a Braveheart adaption, right, of those crazy battles.
Absolutely.
With all the, you know, armies clashing against each other. So kudos to Kerry Nord for that. Anything else we want to say about issue two before we wrap it up, Jesse?
I was happy with it. I think that the first 10 or so issues, I'm going to say 10, are really just, they go great as a trade. I mean, you just get in there. I gave a guy we're flying from, I want to say Los Angeles over to the Middle East. So it was this really, really long, like 26-hour flight. And I gave the first 10 issues to a guy that I was sitting next to. He read them all, like, back to back like that, going through Planet Death and everything. And he just loved it. You know, I mean, I was really into it. It really flows all as one complete story. And, you know, I'm happy that it does that. And you can't do that by cramming everything into just a few pages and then, like, getting into the series. So kudos to Valiant for putting it together this way. I think that spreading it out over, the origin story out over the first three issues is the right way to go. And I'm happy they did it.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I promise you, listeners, it's not going to be very long before we get into issue three. I'm going to try to do them on a more regular basis, even if it does mean rearranging some other things, because I do think there's a lot of value in doing this chronology, especially for people that are discovering Valiant for the first time. I meet a lot of people, and I know a lot of people that I meet at shows when I go to the Valiant panels, and I usually give out the Comic Source lanyards and let people know about Valiant Sundays. And so I know sometimes there are listeners that are new to the podcast, and you don't always want to listen to the issues or the episodes rather where we're, you know, talking about the newest stuff because you're going back to catch up. So hopefully these will be of use to you. So please follow us on iTunes, or you can also find us on Stitcher. Both of those places are great spots to give us reviews. That really helps us increase our visibility and increase the numbers and the downloads. And in turn, you know, the more popular the podcast is, the more access we have to things like shows and artists and interviews and things like that to give you even more great content. So you can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. All three of those spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Speaking of conventions, I just recently was at the amazing Las Vegas Comic-Con, so there should be content coming out for that. And then there's San Diego Comic-Con coming up in the middle of July. Don't forget, in addition to Stitcher and iTunes for past episodes, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. While you're there, be sure and check out all the other pop culture coverage there on movies, TV shows, all that kind of good stuff. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we will talk to you next time.